We need to talk about security, and in this case, DevSecOps. We all know DevOps. We tried with DevOps, we tried to tear down the wall between the developer organization and the operations folks, glue them together to be better, faster, and stronger. Basically, what we try to do is create and maintain what you own. Basically, take ownership of what you create. And nowadays, it's not only your application anymore. It used to be the application, threw it over the wall, and the ops teams took care of deploying it and maintaining it in production. Nowadays, that's not the case anymore, especially not with cloud-native applications, where we now have our environment and our infrastructure as part of the code base. We need to also take care of security in that matter. I mean, if we take care of things like maintainability and scalability as part of the implicit things we do as we code, security should be one of them as well. And I will tell you why in this talk. So my name is Brian Vermeer. I am a developer advocate for Sneak, Java champion, and I do a ton of stuff in the community, like leading the virtual jug and the one of the co-leads of the NL jug in the Netherlands. I'm based in the Netherlands, and for Fuji, I am the community manager for security. However, let's talk about the real things in life, like what are the problems that we're trying to solve with that DevSecOps kind of thing. Well, first of all, we try to deliver software at a lightning pace. I used to work in a government agency, and back in that days, it was like 15 years ago, we maintained software and we only released like 3 times a year. Nowadays, you see that companies release multiple times a year. However, we are focusing on features. And is that good? Because if we only focus on features, implicitly, we take some shortcuts, like security. It's not so much on the mindset of either the developer or the old-fashioned operations folks. But we do need to take care of that, because the point is this time is that the security expertise within teams or within organizations is still siloed at the end. Multiple engineering teams led by basically one security team that tries to help everybody or declines every request and stops you from going to production. That can create friction, especially if we developers don't take security seriously from the beginning when we are developing our applications, our containers, and our infrastructure. Nevertheless, we need to take care of that because we don't want our customer data to be compromised or our application integrity to be compromised, right? Okay, let's go from that. Is that is such a situation so bad? Well, let's get to that. I mean, first of all, if we think about applications and application security or maintaining applications, we might think of our own code. Our own code is the thing, our bread and butter, the thing that we do, the thing that we create, and the thing that we maintain. We might have things like QA in place, we have pair programming, or even things like code reviews. However, this is just the tip of the iceberg. This code is essentially very important, is the business logic. However, it is only 10 to 20% of the code base or of the actual application. If we look into this piece of code, I created a Spring Boot application, and with this piece of code, I created an endpoint, basically my endpoint slash hello. But as you might be able to see, there's already a security issue in this. Let's take a look at that. As a parameter, I will give the string user or the username or whatever that is. However, this parameter that is part of the request, I directly write it back to the response writer. The problem is I don't do any sort of sanitization, which comes back into a cross-site scripting issue. And that is not what we want. Think about it. If I do say things like slash hello and I gave the user script alert one slash script, we will have an alert. But it's not only that. Cross-site scripting can be there in many, many cases, like mouse overs, image tags, or all sorts of other things. Well, this one was easy, but let's get into an example where it might not be that easy to find. This is the Spring Boot application I was telling you about, and I run it in IntelliJ and showing you the plugin my company provides scanning your code. For instance, what we see over here is that we have, well, it recognizes the cross-site scripting issue, which you can see over here. The parameter, and I basically the same thing as I showed you before. One of the fun things that it tells me is where it starts and where the actual flow is. However, you can also see what kind of possible things you have there to fix it. For instance, it says we can do something about, let me check here, use the string escape utils and escape HTML4, which would be a wise thing to do. However, this one was easy to find. The next one might be a bit harder. Well, although SQL injection might be known to everybody else, we can take a look at this or the other one here, that we basically go into find user by name, and we see over here that indeed we have a SQL injection problem where we insert the parameter that we get right into the query. Of course, we can fix this with a parameterized query or a prepared statement. But a more interesting one is, for instance, this one. It is a path reversal issue. Now let me enlarge the code so you can actually see it. It tells me it starts at line 57 and it goes all the way up to line 69. And the thing is, I have a file over here and I try to save this file on my local machine or on the machine that this application runs. However, I'm using the original file name without doing any sanitization, for instance, and saying, hey, we use the upload path and just concatenate the original file name. But what if my file name looks something like this? Then we would have a path reversal issue. And that is exactly what this thing is telling me. What we can do, of course, is check with the canonical path if these things actually start with the canonical path actually starts with the path I want it to be. So getting into your code and fixing it and getting pings right away when you create your code is essential for not bringing any vulnerabilities in while you are creating your application. So we spoke about your own code, your custom code, and that is the thing that comes to mind first. However, there is a thing underneath the surface, underneath the waterline, that is much bigger. If we just still looking at your application, we see that one of the things you probably use, and I know that a lot of you do, are dependencies, frameworks, libraries that do the heavy lifting for you. Basically, if you look at the binary that goes into production, 80 to 90% of the source code is things you inherit, things you pull in using your package manager like Maven or Gradle. So if this is your application, probably this is what you code yourself. And hey, using things like the Spring Boot initializer, it might have even be that some of that is generated as well. However, again, we take good care of our own code, but we should do also take care of what you pull in. Think about it. Do you pull in things blindly? Do you know what you're pulling in and pulling in implicitly? Because frameworks pull in libraries, pull in libraries, pull in libraries several layers deep. So when do you update your libraries? How did you pull them in? Did you look at how, who is maintaining it, etc., etc.? And we know that the open source usage has exploded over the last couple of years, but think about it. We take good care of our own code, but do we also take good care of what we pull in? And think about, if we have to take something out because we see it's not working anymore, it's not maintained anymore, are we able to do that instantly? Because attackers are targeting open source. I mean, if a vulnerability is found in a package that is well known and used all over the place and maybe used by several larger frameworks, if a vulnerability is found in this, we have many, many, many victims. Vulnerabilities are identified all over the place in every ecosystem. But unfortunately, and these are still numbers from 2019, but Maven is the clear winner, as in more vulnerabilities known. However, if we look at these vulnerabilities more closely, we see that most of these vulnerabilities are not in the top level things that you pull, that you put in your POM file or in your Gradle file. No, you pull something in like a Spring Boot Starter or some other framework like Apache Struts or name them. They depend on other libraries, and one of these libraries can be very, very vulnerable. And if one of these libraries that is several layers deep are vulnerable, then you might be in trouble as well. And we did have an example of that just recently, right? December 10th, I know it quite well. It was on a Friday. I was actually on vacation. But then something quite interesting came up. You probably all have heard of the log4j or log4shell problem. And you've seen many of these things like you see the newspaper articles that you see here on screen. Interestingly enough, it's a thing. It's a very, very tiny library, and you probably have heard of it and maybe even use it, that is used in many frameworks or many other libraries. If we check Maven Central, and, well, I have the links later, but over 17,000 Java packages are at least including, at the point when the breach was made at December 10th, 17,000 Java packages included this log4j version that was vulnerable. They did research on how many attacks were attempted in the first 72 hours of when this vulnerability was disclosed. That was over 800,000. But remember that when this thing was disclosed, that was on December 10th, the fix was already out. The fix for the initial problem was already available, I think, since December 4th or December 6th, so at least 4 to 5 days. But did you update? Nevertheless, we see that from the sources within Sneak, we see that 75% of all projects have log4j not as a primary dependency, but as a transitive dependency, and people might not even know that they're using log4j. That makes me think, like, how did you spin up your application? Is your application available? Say we found out that something is wrong. Are you able to pull it down, change the library, and bring it up again? Or does everything go horribly wrong? And how did you inform yourself when something like this happens? Let's get into the log4j hack to show. So let me briefly get into this log4j problem. It is a combination of logging a JNDI or JNDI request containing an LDAP URL. Point is, if I create a log statement with such a new URL, the JNDI request will get evolved. This was a feature implemented long, long time ago. I think it was 2013 or something for some reason, but let's not get into that. If I own the LDAP server in this case, the lookup will be done at the LDAP server. And in this case, evil.com on port 4x9/evil. I own the LDAP server and I give that LDAP, and as a response, I will give a reference back to an HTTP server. Again, I also own that HTTP server. And that HTTP server at that address returns a class. In this case, a compiled class, evil.class. If that evil.class has the right way of constructing and has the getObjectInstance method correctly, I can do whatever I want in that getObjectInstance method because the class will be sent over and it will actually be executed. So this means we have, in a nutshell, we have a remote code execution. However, the first things were that it would only be working in older Java versions or older builds of Java because this setting was set to true, like the trust URL codebase, in older versions and not so much in newer versions. However, this didn't seem to work quite well. It means that even in newer versions, you are vulnerable for this similar exploit. Let me show you. So I have an application over here, the same Spring Boot application, and let me run it. Let's see what the Java version is. Let's first go into the first exploit. So the Java version is 1.8 and built 111. So let's build this one. So I'm running now this application with an older Java version. And this was the initial problem. So let's go to the application. And first thing you see is that his application has a sign-in form. So if I sign in with something that is incorrect, like wrong and wrong, one of the things it does, it starts up my MyAuth1 password, but it also fails, the failed login attempt will be logged with an error logger with log4j. So let's go into the exploit. So I have a log4j server prepared that creates an LDAP server and also spins up an HTTP server. What it does is the LDAP server gives you reference back, and it gives the reference back to this object. Basically, we compile this object to a class, and